The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome in, everybody. Thursday edition of a numbers game. We're live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil the next couple of days. Kelly Bidlin is here. And the Open Championship, it is underway. Always a dangerous night, the Wednesday and Thursday nights here on the west coast of the Open, Kelly, for those of us that have to be up early in the morning. And I can get away from you pretty quickly, but we might be short on sleep. We are not short on action, though, and hopefully you are not holding a Rory McIlroy ticket as we open the show today. Six over par as he has played his first 16 holes. That's really the big story. A guy who was solid today through the first seven, even par, then a double on the par three eighth. And Kelly, as we get things updated today with a somewhat surprising leader early on. That's really the big storyline, though, the struggles of Rory McIlroy and the weather that certainly has started to get worse as we get into the afternoon.
Yeah, wave. Some royal trouble at Royal Troon,
oh,
right,
there
Benny? There you go. You're the play-by-play guy. You're supposed to be better with that stuff.
Royal trouble. I'm not Jim Nance. Okay?
It is.
he can do that.
Look, we kept talking all week. Weather. Watch what it's gonna do. This is, I think, a little bit more difficult and a little bit might be a light way of saying it, a little bit more difficult than we were expecting this morning, Ben, or at least I was. And, I think that's a little bit course and conditions, but definitely conditions. And we talk all the time, you can't win a golf tournament on a Thursday, but you can lose one. And I think that's with the Open and how many other guys might be affected by it today, Ben. I don't know if I want to go that far with some of these guys that they're completely out of it, but man, you can go right to the bottom of the leaderboard, and man, if you got some bets on some of these guys, it's looking ugly. How about I don't know how many people really bet Ricky Fowler, but Ricky Fowler is six over par through five holes right now. Rory six over. He's heading to his 17th right now. Sahith Theegala six over. He's heading to 18 right now. Max Homa, I mean, he's had a difficult season all year, five over through 16. Tom Kim, five over in the clubhouse. He's a guy that I had a top 20 bet on. Bryson DeChambeau, five over for his round today. It could have been a whole lot worse, though. He got had an eagle on the back nine, a long par save for him. So he's five over right now. It could be a lot worse, though. Man, Tommy Fleetwood, I know a lot of people bet five over in the clubhouse already. He is not looking good. Sungjae Im, five over through his round. He's a guy that I had multiple bets on. It is. You're getting the theme. You could scroll through the leaderboard. There are a lot of ugly numbers out there. Victor Hovland, four over par. If you are remotely close, Ludvig Åberg did work his way back. He was, I think, out to five over at one point, finishes his round at three over par. Was scrolling and looking for his name because I know he was further down there at one point, worked his way back. Solid finish by him to get back to three over.
Not bad, yes. And it's what's funny about it is with how drawn out the start times are at the Open Championship, more so than any other major. We had the first groups tee off 1:35 a.m. Eastern time last night. A lot of us were staying up to at least watch the first groups go off there. Scotty Scheffler, the tournament favorite, he's yet to even tee off. He goes off, Kelly, in about 7 minutes, which is the local 3:10 p.m. Open Championship starting time. Weather right now in the low 60s. It is the wind is about what we expected in that 20-mile-an-hour gust range, but it has been raining off and on as we've gone into the afternoon here, at least at Circa where we're at. You have a lot of the first-round over-under score props, which many of those, to our point, the way we start the show, have gone to the over, Kelly. Scheffler, 69.5. This is a par 71, if you're not familiar. And it leads you into thinking, okay, this is a guy who's been priced at another worldly number and has, at the same time, not had all that much experience or pedigree playing Lynx golf. It leads into, are we at all taking anything away from what we've seen early here, Kelly, translating that into a guy in Scheffler who, throughout the course of really the last year and a half, has been able to overcome any sort of issues that other golfers are facing on the course?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think you would say, of the tournaments, Lynx golf, he doesn't have the best history on, doesn't have a ton of history is more the way I would say it. So it really, at what we've seen this morning, really going to play out, for almost everybody out there, or is his talent going to be just be a cut above That will be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see him out on the golf course. Guy, I'm really got my eyes on right now, Colin Morikawa. He just got through one. He's one over through one already. So, he was a guy that I didn't make any first round leader bets, except I did a couple hours ago put one in on him when it looked like I knew he still had to go. There were still a couple big names that still had to go, but it looked like you kind of get the idea of what conditions were going to be like. And if you could just fight through, three under was as low as you needed to go. Justin Thomas right now, your leader at three under, had gotten as low as four under. We'll point out, we were talking a little bit before, Russell Henley kind of felt like he missed a couple that could have put him right there. Alex Noren, a great round at two under par. Justin Rose, Nikolai Højgaard there at two under par as well. Adam Scott, who's been playing some great golf recently, he's one under par, done for his round for the day. So a few good rounds shot out there this morning.
Yeah, Justin Thomas, your leader in the clubhouse, 10-1 on the live odds board, while Scheffler, who is about to tee off momentarily, you're 4-1 leader at this point. If you had a Romain Langasque ticket at 300-1, raise your hand, everybody. If you did, he withdrew. He only lasted about six holes today, Kelly. So that was our first casualty.
Yeah,
he was like, I'm done. Six holes.
This weather sucks.
Yeah, I need a hot toddy and some warmth. Well, I don't know. He's French, so I'm not sure what the drink of choice would be. Maybe not a hot toddy. I wouldn't power rate that number one. At least for me, what I found the most interesting as far as some of the strokes gained data early, Kelly, it's that the off the tee has mattered the least of anything so far. We figured that not surprising that would be the case, simply because did we think that Bryson DeChambeau would be bombing drivers on every hole like he was in the practice rounds? Mm-hmm. Certainly not, once you had the real weather conditions we were expecting come up. But of the top 12 in strokes gained off the tee, only two of those guys under par so far. And that strokes gained data is only taking into account guys who finished their round today. So I found that fascinating, Kelly, at least on the strokes gained part of it. Justin Thomas, second in the field in strokes gained putting. For those who have finished, he's your leader. But Justin Rose, by far, the leader in strokes gained approach today. Joaquin Niemann, for what it's worth, leader in strokes gained around the green, who finished at even par.
Yeah, it is interesting. I don't think all that surprising, though, is the wind and rain. I mean, it's really the mix. If you're watching at home or looked at any of these pictures, it looks like they're walking through clouds of fog right now. It's just crazy.
I love how the new camera angles they have, the trackers of these guys, it really does make it look more gladiatorial.
Yeah,
and also makes it look like Royal Troon might as well, this might as well be, did you ever watch Shutter Island, the movie? Just be hanging out there, with the hurricane coming in. It's like 1954, and it's just like, good luck out there.
Right, yeah, that's what it looks like. And, so when you're seeing that on the screen, to hear that off the tee numbers are not going great is not that big of a surprise to me.
Yeah, no doubt. JT, the question with all these guys, and you usually see one player, right, the putter's just on. But this is a guy who, while the recent form has not been there, this is a guy with history in general and has performed very, very well, especially, I think, maybe surprisingly for a lot of people across the pond. You think about Justin Thomas's really good Ryder Cup performance in Rome and what he's been able to do in years past, despite not having, maybe at the Open Championship, the highest results. Question now becomes, can he sustain this? The difference is he'll go out later tomorrow, and you just wonder. It's always tough with the Open, how these early and late waves can sometimes differ with the weather. You go out super early Thursday, now you're sitting on what, at least for now, is a one-shot lead. We'll see if that holds up, but now you're sitting on that until late tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, it did look like, when I was my last check last night and then even this morning, it still looked like if there was going to be any advantage, it would kind of be late, early, I thought at least. Yeah. So as far as Thursday, Friday went, the worst stuff looked like it was going to come in late on Friday. But man, this is already way worse though than what I was expecting. Anyway, and we're not really, it's the rain. We knew there was going to be rain. The wind is kind of right where you read, Ben. That's kind of where we knew it was going to be at. So it's just really, you can try to predict all this stuff in the world, but until these guys really get out there and start playing it, you don't really know truly how tough it is. And it is affecting these guys more than I thought it was going to.
And we still have guys teeing off up until about an hour and a half from now. So that's really how spaced out the last local start on the tee time, 4:27 p.m. Tiger Woods as well, even through two poles, if you're wondering on how Tiger's round has gotten off to that start. Par for Tiger. Scheffler about to tee it off. there on number one. We will certainly keep you updated as the round continues. Kelly, you're hoping to see some red popping up on your guys here soon.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That'd be great for all of us. We get some birdies out there. Not many to be had today.
There's even this kind of day, like Tony Finau got in at even par. Hey, Tony, great round. That is good enough for me. I'm not going to be greedy today. You get in around even par, that's good enough.
Only 12 players under par. Now, granted, still some to get underway, but... Yeah, I mean, right now, and this is even including a bunch of guys who have just teed off, but your top 30 includes the even par guys, so that's a great start. If you're at least at even, you feel, honestly, I'd say anywhere, even like the John Rahms of the world who, you know, struggled to a two over. He missed a very makeable birdie putt at the last. But you get into the clubhouse, you know, T50. Top 50 at two over. You're five off the lead right now. You feel totally alive.
I watched a good amount of his round too. I do have one. I do have an outright bet on him. Nothing else, but just the outright. It could have been. It's one of those rounds that could have been a lot better, a lot worse. So you know, Rahm's probably gonna be beating himself up a little bit today. But I think, like you said, you get in there, look at the rest of the leaderboard, realize. Okay, a couple strokes worse, you would have been right there with the rest of those guys.
Look, and Rahm, all things considered, I mean, he gained on approach. He gained tee to green, around the green, putting, just you know, slightly above a field average. He was a little bit worse off the tee, but all in all, not around. There was nothing data-wise that really, you know, jumped off the page, right? It wasn't like this crazy round for John Rahm. T48, if you are in that group at two over par. You know, I realized who was drinking the hot toddy right now. It's John Daly, 11 over. Tied for last.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I mean, he might have been drinking a hot toddy on the course. I told you, right, my story of going to the PGA at Whistling Straits, and my parents were volunteers. This was 04.
No.
And I was out there on the first hole on Thursday at, whatever, 7 a.m. It's like 45 degrees. Wind is just whipping off the coast of Lake Michigan. We're in winter coats in July or August, I think, at the time. And John Daly pars number one and then just lights a cig. And I was like, man, legendary stuff. He was in the first group.
Legendary athlete.
First group of the 04 PGA Championship. Alas, we'll talk about some of the other big headlines in the sporting world. A big WNBA and NBA Summer League night last night. And we'll get into our guest list as well as some MLB futures talk ahead of the second half getting underway.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on our football special before the end of July and get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price, and with VSiN Pro, you'll gain access to our daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and all our special edition betting guides like the new NFL guide, which is out right now with all the detailed team, division, and conference breakdowns you could ever want. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Don't wait. Sign up before the end of July. Get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. Sign up now at vsin.com/subscribe. The AFC North on the docket today. We'll break that down coming up in about a half hour. Also, Zach Cohen joins us because it is almost time for Olympic betting, Kelly. Can't wait for that. Also, NBA win totals are out, something we talked about on Monday. So really excited to get Zach's take because we've had a few days to marinate on these. Zach Cohen going to join us coming up 10:30 Eastern. And then Thor Nystrom, we dive into some college football coming up in our second hour on the show.
Yeah, always great to talk college football with Thor.
And love Thor.
Yeah, I can't wait to get Zach on next segment. I did... We'll go over it a little bit later in the show. I did make one win total bet this morning.
Okay.
Some of the Vegas shops finally started to post stuff. And two awards bets? Yeah, two awards bets.
Oh, there we go. Let's fire it up. July 18th, Kelly Bidlin. Rocking. Right now, Summer League is basically the only thing day-to-day we can actually bet on. But we should mention the couple of small pieces from the NBA and then WNBA from last night. You get Bronny James, who scores 12 points, is a high in the Summer League so far, 5 of 11 from the field. For Bronny last night, team wins by 1 point. Remember, there was that prop that was put out there. This is for the regular season, of course. But will Bronny James score 15 points in a regular season game this year for the Lakers, which I believe that was set at -110. And my first thought was, if only these books were brave enough to just hang a no price on that. Yes. I think the entire world would be betting no and hanging out and just, you know, putting that money aside for the whole year and letting it cash. Because I don't know how many games he even plays at the NBA level. It will likely be a lot of G League for Bronny James, but at least it was a guy who, after struggling like we expected, Kelly, looked solid, much better than it was originally. It originally went in the first couple of games. However, I'm certainly in the camp of I'm never one to fault the overreaction and say, oh, this guy made a few shots against basically G League guys or probable European guys when it's all said and done. So I'm not going to take much away from it.
Yeah, it was good to see him hit some shots. I think that as I keep saying, however you feel about the entire process of Bronny James becoming a Los Angeles Laker, that is come and gone. That is done, and I would just be rooting for this kid now because there is. All the pressure in the world on this guy and against him, seemingly, for a guy that was a second round pick in the NBA draft. That is just not a spot that, you know, we often see guys, emerge from and play and have incredibly long NBA careers. So I'll be rooting for him. I did watch a lot of that game. I thought I saw some bright spots from Bronny last night. So I think some good things for him to build off of. He was over 15, I believe, from three going into that game last night. So it was good to see him hit one of those early. Some exciting summer league action going on out there. I wish I'd been able to. Have you gotten out yet? I haven't gotten out for a day yet.
No.
Too much open championship stuff.
Yeah, there's been a lot going on.
Yeah.
Too much open championship stuff as well.
You're doing like 18 shows a day here.
Yeah, that's part of it. I keep saying maybe Friday, but that's a big old TBD.
Yeah, me too.
Big old TBD. It's like, depends on how the arena football prep work is going, because I have not had any time to dive into that, to have a game on a Saturday. Bronny, 2 of 5 from three. I say this without meaning to be like a troll in any way. I say this with all sincerity, Kelly, since I did cover the G League for the last 2 years doing games there. Playing the majority of your games for the South Bay Lakers from a purely developmental perspective is a really, really good thing. That's not to say, okay, yeah, Bronny, forget about playing in the NBA at least this year. But honestly, the best thing for him, you play in El Segundo. It's an arena that holds about 1,000 people. It's basically a practice gym. But their coaches, year in, year out, the guys, having watched that team, they're always the one of the more well-put-together G League teams out there. Their development is top-notch. That will be a great experience for him. I say that in all sincerity. Just go to South Bay, play your 45 games there, and he will be a much better player by next year.
Yeah, as far as the, you know, betting those props, I think we'll go pro tip right off the top here, Ben. There might not be a no option. You definitely shouldn't be betting that yes.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right on that.
Just wait till, like, if you want to bet over on Bronny props, I'm not saying that's bad. Just wait till he's actually called up into the NBA. Like, it's not. That's right. But it's probably not where he is. Not going to be starting off, I would think, the season there. He will be in the G League. I would think at some point when it is convenient later in the season, he will get the call up to play some minutes with his dad. And I don't know how long that will be. But there's just no reason to bet that now. Wait until the point where he actually gets called up.
Plus,
you could bet overs for that game.
The most likely scenario he goes over anyway is if the Lakers season just goes to hell and they're out of it, and it's March or early April. I mean, it's the back half of the season. It's not going to be November that he's getting call-ups and those opportunities to play. We also would be remiss if we did not mention what happened in the WNBA last night. Caitlin Clark breaks the WNBA single-game assist record with 19. That was the final game before this now month-long break here for the Olympics, which Clark notably not on the U.S. women's national team. So yet another splendid troll job there from Caitlin going in, as it has been a pretty much, Kelly, like a month worth of just kind of FU middle finger up performances to the establishment of women's basketball when she beat Diana Taurasi, who was on the team, handily beat the Mercury in that crazy come from behind effort where she was amazing in the game, had the first ever triple double by a rookie as well in that span. And here she goes, 19 assists as the, it's crazy. The rookie of the year race, more than anything, as much as Angel Reese continues to put up great numbers and represents great value. Every time you kind of think is better, all right, hey, these Reese numbers, they got to shorten up, right? Well, Clark does something like this and basically seems to lock up the award every time she does something like that.
I watched a lot of that game, too. I probably watched half that game. She is. It's just, you know, we've said a lot during when she was in college, but, man, I could watch her play basketball any day. It is so fun watching her game. It's just, it does remind you a little bit of you know, kind of what Steph was back in the day, but even just, you know, at the WNBA level, she's playing more, you know, inside the arc and so much more distributor. And it, man, she had some great passes last night in that game. It was really fun to watch. And the rookie of the year race, though, it is incredible, man. I know me and you are both kind of, you know, lighter women's basketball fans, yeah. When it comes to WNBA and college, but the double doubles that Angel Reese is putting up is incredible. Like, that is, it's amazing. But the one I keep going back to with that, Ben, is it feels like Victor Wembanyama all over again, right? Like, that dude was not the rookie of the year December 1st in the of this past season in the NBA. It was Chet Holmgren. He was the rookie of the year at that point. But, like, was there any chance that Victor Wembanyama was not going to win the award with how much hype he was coming in with?
Of course.
That's just what it feels like with Caitlin Clark.
The other part of this that, from the betting angle, is the most fascinating. Because rookie of the year, you're right. What can you really take away from it other than, sure, the number might be too long on Reese, but she ain't winning this award. It's the WNBA All-Star Game coming up Saturday, which, for those not familiar, it is the WNBA All-Stars versus the U.S. Women's National Team. I mean, we've talked about how the ratings have just gone through the roof this year, and WNBA has broken all sorts of ratings records with the Clark games, but this is going to take the cake, you would think, Kelly, with all the bad blood, right? With how polarizing an issue this has become. And the Team USA, usually, right? I mean, you're going to be an overwhelming favorite in the game. The most notable storyline from this event over the years was the misprice that our friends here at Circa had that resulted in, what, the 50-point line move on the total to the under when they didn't realize that it was a legitimate...
Yeah, I forgot about that.
They forgot it was not just an exhibition. I think they priced it at like 239 or something, and it closed like 186 and went way under, something like that. Well, that's really been the only notable thing about this game in the past. Now it's Team USA. They're only a 5.5-point favorite against the Caitlin Clark-led WNBA All-Stars, and total 196.5. Like, you don't think there's going to be some bad blood? Like, that's must-watch TV. And I almost wonder if, as much as Caitlin Clark's kind of had the upper hand with winning some games against these Olympians, having huge performances throughout the first half, I also wonder at the same time, Kelly, I think we probably are thinking the same thing. Like, really only 5.5 for a Sabrina Ionescu Team USA squad who you know, will be taking that game more than seriously. They will want nothing more than to win that game convincingly, to make the statement of, yeah, Caitlin Clark, she's great, but she's not ready for the national team. As crazy of a, as crazy as that is to actually have to go out and prove, but. 5.5 seems a little bit light. That's just my
first thought. That kind of rang in my ears as soon as you said it too. I did not look at that. I will have to look at the rosters a little bit more deeply. But that sounds light for sure.
Definitely no misprice on the total this year. You're not getting 230s, unfortunately. So you have Aaliyah Boston, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese is also part of that. So you have all really the top young players as well. And then of course it is a much more veteran laden. The Sabrina Ionescu, Kelsey Plum, Brianna Stewart, still Diana Taurasi, Asia Wilson, arguably the best player in the WNBA going right now. So, it's a loaded women's national team. They're giant favorites to win that event. And as great as Caitlin Clark is, you kind of wonder, will this be one of those moments in the betting space where, not to say overreaction, but the hype on Clark gets to a point where you could finally take advantage the other way. Fascinating to see where that line goes, because it's coming up Saturday night, 8:30 Eastern there from Phoenix, is the WNBA All-Star Game on ABC. I got to think there will be massive ratings for that. Speaking of the Olympics, Zach Cohen going to join us next, talk some early thoughts on Olympic betting, get his thoughts on some NBA win totals as well when we continue on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on A Numbers Game, where we continue to follow round one of the Open Championship. Tiger Woods alert, Kelly Bidlin. Birdie at 3. Tiger goes to 1 under par. And Scottie Scheffler, your tournament favorite, off to a poor start, finds the bunker on number 1. Cannot get up and down. Scheffler is 1 over through 1, and Brooks Koepka already 2 over through 3. So more, the beat goes on, really, as we're opening up the show here. Rory McIlroy about to get into the clubhouse at 7 over par, your second tournament favorite on that. And I believe I'm filibustering here because Kelly is going ahead and making a WNBA All-Star game bet. Is that right?
Yeah, probably. Okay. Yeah.
Found four and a halves out there here in Vegas?
There are 4.5s out here, and that seems a little light to me.
Right. Shout out to Matt Hicks, one of our technical directors today, for doing some shopping during the break there, finding 4.5. That's 5.5 at DK. As we've looked at the rosters, seems a little bit lopsided.
I'm all for a Tiger Woods weekend. Are you kidding me? That is, as much as we might just dismiss him as betters these days, I am all for Tiger Woods making some headlines this weekend. Let's go.
Amidst all the carnage, Tiger goes out, just shoots a 68, and it's like, oh boy, here we go.
It was some of us thinking about driving in. I mean, you get conditions like this, it becomes a lot more about experience, right? Guys that have played through this stuff before, guys that have seen this course once or twice before, it becomes a lot more about that when the conditions are ugly. So, I mean, you mentioned the off-the-tee stuff. Off-the-tee, if it not mattering as much anymore, if you're just asking Tiger to hit irons and get, you know, around the green, and if he can putt well, man, he could easily be right there after today.
No question. Tiger, birdies three after pars on 1 and 2. Very good start there. We'll keep you posted on the Open Championship. Right now, we go out to our Progressive guest line. First guest of the day. Always great to talk some ball with our guy, Zach Cohen, who joins us right now. Follow him at Betting on X as we go to the Progressive guest line. Good to see you, Zach. We were joking during the break that, you know, Zach is just sweating like ITF, you know, level 125 women's events while we're all watching the Open Championship. But that's neither here nor there on the tennis side. Summer League, I will give you a shout out because you gave out this was last week. You gave out Orlando Magic is a like kind of a long shot summer league play, and I at the very least they got off to a good start here. They beat Detroit by like 30, and Orlando is just looking up to see where they're at today. Magic playing against Brooklyn. They have been favored here throughout this tournament, so you've been pretty spot on there, Zach. I will give you credit because I don't think many people are diving into rosters on summer league, but at least a good job by you on that so far.
Yeah, I gave out the Magic and Raptors as futures. I think both started 2-0, but I think they both missed the semifinals. I believe that I think all teams play 5 games, but the first 3 days determined who would be in the semifinals. So, you know, they're just playing these next 2 games, but they don't really matter.
Well, I take it all back, Zach. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I take it all back. At least for the, you know, to start out though, I mean, the betting markets have shown a lot of teams, but there have been some kind of wild disparities as far as the odds go. While I think most people were kind of very, very casually watching that, the Bronny James game last night, obviously the big headline, the win totals came out, at least at DK, were posted late Sunday. We are starting to see them populate here in Vegas. Kelly has made a couple bets, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. As far as these win totals here for NBA, fascinating that they come out at this time of year, especially as it's a dead time in the sports calendar for the most part, and we have a lot more opportunity to dive in and get the breakdowns. What stood out to you as you started to look at some of these win totals?
I thought that the Suns total was a little too low. I mean, granted, I am a Suns fan, but, you know, they did win 49 games last year in a year that people viewed as, you know, a disaster for them. And they had a lot of bad injury luck a year ago. I don't think that the team ever really gelled under Frank Vogel. I think that bringing Mike Budenholzer in is going to really help Phoenix. Budenholzer is one of the best regular season coaches of all time. And honestly, he plays, you know, a system that is going to prioritize the three ball, which is something that the Suns really need to do, that they are at, you know, a mathematical disadvantage every night with the amount of mid-range jumpers that they take between Durant, Beal, and Booker. So just having someone come in there and tell them, look, you need to start taking more threes to keep up with opponents is going to help quite a bit. But at the same time, they also added, you know, 2 rotation players in Monty Morris and Mason Plumlee, 2 guys that are proven, know how to play off the bench. That's not something that they had last year, especially at the point guard position. People were really clamoring for Phoenix to add a point guard. So I just kind of think that, you know, 47 wins is very realistic. I honestly think that the Suns are going to be a threat to win 50 with Budenholzer at the helm. I think that they're a little bit underrated heading into the season because of what the Timberwolves did to them last year. And then I also kind of felt a little bit similarly about the Cleveland Cavaliers down at 47.5. I think that that number was also a little too low. It's a team that won 48 games last year, despite, you know, Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, and Darius Garland all missing like, you know, a quarter of the season at different times. They were never really healthy. They're going to have those guys back in the mix this year. Kenny Atkinson coming in to be their new head coach. I think he's going to do a good job. Just an offensive coach that I think is really, really good, honestly. I thought that he did a better job with the Nets than people gave him credit for. A lot of off-ball movements going to be expected there. So if that defense stays in that top 10 range, I think that the offense probably gets to around top 10, top 12. And I just would be surprised if Cleveland doesn't win at least 48.
Yeah, Zach, I know you and I were texting a little bit the other day. I like both of those. Any concern? We heard a lot about the trade talks around the draft with the Suns, and then we've kind of heard Darius Garland hanging around almost all summer about something that happens with him. Where are you at with both those teams right now? You think those rosters kind of stay set?
I think so. I mean, I think that the Durant stuff was just a lot of smoke. I think that a lot of teams try to, you know, play vulture with the Suns, especially with Durant, just to try to see how unhappy he is, you know, put out there that your team's looking to trade you, see if that upsets you and make you force a trade. I don't think it's going to happen. I think you saw, you know, Matt Ishbia come out and double down saying, you know, we're all in on Kevin Durant. Durant recently did a couple of interviews and said that he's really happy in Phoenix. So I think that he has a much better relationship with, you know, Devin Booker and the rest of this team than people think. And I think he is pretty happy in Phoenix. So I'd be pretty surprised if he's traded. I think with Garland, I'm not terribly high on the fit between him and Mitchell to begin with. So if they did move him and they got like a pretty serviceable wing, I don't think that anything would be much worse. So I wouldn't feel any worse about that over if they did move Garland.
Yeah, I have a feeling I will be following along with you, Zach, on the over on the Cavs. I did bet it last year, though, and it didn't get home. So that's kind of in the back of my mind as well.
Don't let that influence you. Get on. The classic bettors mentality. As Zach Cohen joins us at Betting on X, where you follow Zach, our senior editor at VSiN.com. You bring up, too, one of the many teams that are viewed to be competitive in the Western Conference landscape with Phoenix. That's, to me, what was so fascinating when you saw these win totals drop, right, Zach? It's like Grizzlies 47.5. I'm just running down the list here of where DK has these at. Suns 46.5, Kings 46.5, Pelicans 45.5, like Lakers 44.5, Warriors 43.5, even the Rockets at 42.5 have gotten a lot of buzz after finishing 500 last year. Like, not all these teams are going to have success. I mean, we didn't even mention the San Antonio Spurs, who are even further down on the odds board. Isn't that kind of the one angle for bettors to at least parse through and say, you know, the way this is going to work out, you're going to have 11 to 12 pretty competitive teams in the West. Obviously, only 10 even get into the play-in tournament. Only 8 make the actual postseason. And as a result of that, just some of these win totals in general, Zach, will not be attainable based on that.
Yeah, that's kind of why I'm staying away from win totals in the 50s. I just think it's going to be a gauntlet in the West. I should mention, just because we're talking teams that might not make the playoffs, I do think that one of my favorite bets heading into the season is Warriors to miss the playoffs at minus 110. I don't really see what they're doing with this roster. I thought that letting Clay walk, you know, it made sense, I guess, like if they didn't want to pay him, you know, $25 million, but he ended up getting a pretty reasonable deal in my opinion. So maybe he wouldn't have taken that with Golden State. You know, it was a principal thing, but, you know, bringing in Kyle Anderson, Buddy Hield, and DeAnthony Melton, that does not excite me with the roster that they currently have. I'm not as high on Jonathan Kuminga as other people are. I do think that, you know, there's some potential for them to take that swing on Lauri Markkanen. I mean, I saw that, you know, DK did not hang a win total on Golden State, and I do think, you know, there's the same with the Jazz. So I think that there's something there with maybe they are going to finish that trade before the season. Maybe that's the way that they get in. But I'm still not even sure that if you move all your depth, if you move Pajemski, Kuminga, you know, and all your picks for marketing, I'm just not positive that there's still a playoff team there.
And there were three teams that have not been hung as a result of just what you're talking about, some of that speculation, Zach, as to what could happen here in the short term. But the Warriors, as Zach mentions, about minus 110 either way to make or miss the postseason. As far as these award markets, Kelly's teased that we're going to talk about some of his awards bets. He's made a couple. Anything that stood out from those initially being priced for you?
Not much, honestly. I jumped on Wemby at 40-1. I think JVT, Kelly and I all texted when we saw that number. I feel pretty good about that now that Paul's there, because I do think that he's just going to put up stupid numbers. I think that San Antonio, you know, flirts with 35, 36 wins, but if they do somehow get to 40 or so and Wemby puts up the numbers we think he's going to, I think he's going to be in the conversation. Like, you see these clips coming out of him, you know, at the France practices, like he's just hitting step back threes over guards. Like, he just looks absolutely ridiculous. And I do think they put a good team around him this year. So I think he's going to look a lot better.
Thanks for including me on that group text, although I have not done NBA shows with you guys in the past, so I don't blame you or beseech you.
You can grab 30.
You're an extended chat.
I'm an extended chat. 20. Yeah, I see 28-1 at DK. Is it weird to you guys? I'll include Kelly in this too. That for most improved player, Wembanyama is also the co-favorite here. He's 10-1 after being rookie of the year a season ago. It's just kind of weird to me. I don't know how to really think about it.
Well, I think I just hate that market more than anything imaginable.
Yes.
Like,
that's part like of it.
Wembanyama should not. He should not be eligible to win Most Improved Player. We know he's already like just a freak. So what would he have to do next season to be the Most Improved Player? It's insane.
So that's where I made a couple bets. I'll get to those later. Okay. I think it's the one market you can bet a little earlier. One of the awards markets you can bet a little earlier. I'm with you though, Zach and Ben. How many awards are we going to give the guy at the end of the day? I think that's where you kind of have to draw the line, and that's where I would. kind of the reason why I wouldn't bet him there. If we're thinking defensive player of the year, maybe more, how many is he possibly going
to
take down?
That's a great point. Zach Cohen, always good to see him. VSiN senior editor at Betting on X. Great to see you as always, Zach. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
We'll talk some NFL. AFC North is up next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our new look website, VSiN.com, we have Wes Reynolds' full best bets for the Open Championship. In case you missed anything, want to at least reference it as the tournament is underway, or get some action on the Barracuda, the alt event this week on the PGA. Wes has those plays online, as well as college football win total best bets out right now from our Steve Mackinnon, the college football guide, set to come out here 2 weeks from today. That's along with betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. Find it at the new look, optimized for mobile, VSiN.com. A bet has been made officially on the WNBA All-Star Game. I feel like for show purposes, Kelly, we are both, I'm definitely going to be making this bet after the show here, but you are in on the
I'm in. Team USA laying 4.5. Can't wait to see
Who would ever thought? You're rooting for USA, but against basically America's child.
That's like, right.
How weird is that going to be?
That's right. You're going down, Caitlin. You're going down.
I can't wait for the for first take to break down the betting odds.
I can't wait.
The disrespect.
I can't wait till I completely forget about the game. When is it? Saturday night?
Saturday, 8:30.
Yeah.
I can't wait to talk about our inevitable, like Clark hits a 3-pointer or hits a half quarter at the buzzer to lose by 4. And we inevitably talk about that on Live Bet Sunday. That is a big event this weekend, the Women's All-Star Game, which has taken on a new meaning for sure this year. Also, Tiger Woods gives one back at 4-3 Jack on the par 5 fourth, Kelly. Not what you wanted to see there. Tiger misses about an 8-footer for par. So he drops back to even. Scottie Scheffler, par's number 2. He's 1 over through 2. Brooks Koepka goes back-to-back birdies after a 2 over through 3-hole start. So Koepka back to even through 5 holes. And then I just wanted to briefly bring up the final
Brooks
numbers now. That we got the data golf numbers on Rory McIlroy. Now that his round is over, 7 over par for McIlroy. Tied for 125th for the tournament, second favorite. McIlroy lost almost a stroke and a half off the tee, about a stroke and a quarter on approach, Kelly, and a little over a stroke putting. Minus 2.7 strokes gained tee to green. The only thing he was even about field average was around the green, but that ended up being kind of a moot point. So just one of those days where there was really nothing you could even hold your hat to of saying there was positivity on the McIlroy side, just below average pretty much everywhere.
I think with conditions like this, it's really hard to kill guys for playing poorly, too poorly, but it's just that's where you're hoping you can just hang around. Like, you know, who are we talking about? Ludwig getting a couple shots back, right? It's just you don't want to go that far down. You know what I mean? If you're John Rahm, right, you finished at 2 over, okay, if you can just get one of those rounds in, fine, you're still in the mix, you're still in this conversation completely. 7 over though, man, that's going to be tough to come back from.
I mean, Ludwig, who finishes 4 over, he's tied for 85th, but he gained on approach, gained off the tee, he was minus 3.18 on putting, and that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But you at least look at his numbers versus a McIlroy, and setting aside the score
you're
and then being 3 points
that
off,
yeah,
you would feel so much better about Oberg's.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you were to, say, reverse the scores, and you say, well, Ludwig's 7 over and McIlroy's 4, well, maybe not to win the tournament, but at least to be competitive, you would like where Oberg is at just from a purely statistical profile. Just some early takeaways here as the Open Championship continues. All right, Kelly, it is our division of the day here on the show. We'll spend, I think, probably the next couple segments talking about this. AFC North, arguably the most competitive of the divisions this year. Will Kelly make a joke about Mike Tomlin's career 500 or better record? That's
you mean
about
how
minus,
he's never had a losing season in his entire career, Ben?
I was going to say how that was like a minus 8,000 favorite to cash, but I couldn't even get it out of my mouth before Kelly did make the joke here. We'll get to Pittsburgh in a little bit. Let's just start top to bottom with the Baltimore Ravens favored to win this division, yet there has been some turnover, several new offensive line starters. They lose their defensive coordinator, Mike McDonald, so he is now out, although they do promote from within this year. That's certainly a positive there for John Harbaugh's staff in general, as Baltimore this year promote Zach Orr from the D-line coach. Just from a general perspective, it seems like because of how polarizing a quarterback Lamar Jackson is, people have been so quick to want to jump on the anti-Baltimore train this year with how there has been roster turnover, with how the playoffs ended for the Ravens, with a team set at a 10.5 win total. I completely disagree with that line of thinking, but where do you stand?
I am not. I've never been the biggest Lamar Jackson guy in big moments, you know, sort of thing. But for a regular season, I think a lot of what you saw a year ago, there's, I don't know why we would be expecting too much regression from that standpoint. Yes, you're talking about a major coordinator change. I'm not gonna take away from that. That's a big deal. But yeah, I mean, this is you know, probably the toughest division in football this year. In my mind, and you know, the Ravens, I don't expect to take a major step back. But I do think when you got a healthy Joe Burrow in there, and I think that Cleveland getting all their pieces together and healthy on the offensive side of the ball are going to have something to say about this division as well. And, you know, with how, I mean, I think it's hard. I'm not even going to go to Lamar Jackson here. I think it's hard to replicate the amazing amount of success they had on the defensive side of the ball last year. For asking them to do that again is lofty expectations.
At the same time, I still look at that as being a top 10 front seven in the league, top five secondary for Baltimore. And I like that Orr comes in. He's been in the system, right? It's not some exotic new look from what Baltimore has to do. I would also say what really for me is a huge positive for the Ravens, as much as the big negative is, what do you do on probably still a bottom 10 wide receiver and pass catching unit? What do you do with a new look offensive line that's likely going to be in the bottom half of positional rankings this year? Baltimore, within this slog of the AFC North, they have the best rest edge advantage of any team in the NFL, let alone the AFC North, the entire NFL, which is huge. When you play the fourth hardest strength of schedule this year, to me, the strength of schedule is not as simple as just, okay, they play a lot of really hard opponents. It's also about when, where is the rest on that? How many of those tough games are on short weeks? And Baltimore, fortunately, a lot of their short weeks are mirrored with opposing teams, or their biggest matchups are in situations where they have extra time off, say on a Monday night or on these special one-off sort of games. Like, for example, you open up with Kansas City. That's week one, so there's no rest edge either way, even though that is a Thursday night game. Not as tough of a situation as in the past going on the road for a week one game. So with that being said, I am high on Baltimore. I actually power rated them. My power rankings here, Kelly, I have them number two behind Kansas City, not only in the AFC, but in the NFL. I have them above San Francisco heading into the year.
Okay. Yeah, it's hard for me to push back on that. I do have a bet on the Bengals to win this division. I bet that kind of as soon as numbers came out, thought that number would end up dropping a bit. It has, not a ton, but that's where I went with the AFC North as far as what I've bet so far. I don't think there's been any. Well, that and then Steelers. Steelers again. But
well, it is, you know, and again, scheduling-wise for Cincinnati, of the four AFC North teams, you have, just looking, running down the strength of schedule, and these are by opposing team win totals. Baltimore, fourth hardest. Cleveland, third hardest strength of schedule. Pittsburgh, hardest strength of schedule. Cincinnati, because of the poor finish last year with the injuries to Joe Burrow at quarterback, sixth easiest this year. Usually, I'm not one to say that it's the be-all, end-all, but that means something when you're in a division this competitive. And really, if you break down the roster, Kelly, besides the running back room, which are basically just punting on because of where the rest of the offense is at, and the secondary, which I still have pretty big questions about, definitely a bottom half unit in my mind. Outside of that, not a ton of holes in the roster. It's more just the belief in, does Joe Burrow immediately reascend to the top of the crop, and that offense continues to look really good with him healthy? And can Lou Anarumo at DC rekindle some of the magic that he had of previous years?
Yeah, I think that, look, the defense is still definitely a little bit of a concern to me. But yeah, I do expect Joe Burrow to slide back in there and be perfectly fine. I think from a long-term perspective, if you're a Bengals fan and a Bengals better year after year, if you're betting futures on them, this is, you know, the injury history is getting a little concerning with Joe Burrow now. At this point, I would say that there just is something almost every single season. But yeah, Ben, you said it well, man. This is already, we're looking at some of the toughest schedules in the NFL because this is the toughest division in the NFL, and the Bengals, because and we get this with a couple teams every year, right? A starting quarterback goes out. It's so key to what they do, and they end up tumbling down the standings. That means it leads to an easier schedule the year later.
Right.
And yes, I think the easier schedule, when I'm really looking, comparing Baltimore to Cincinnati, right? Like, that's one of the big differences to me. It is the schedule difference with what those two teams face outside of the division, and that's where I do lean Cincinnati's way more.
Yeah, Bengals open open at home against New England. They are a 9-point week one favorite, probably going to be the consensus survivor choice. Not that that is the correct thing to do, but just based purely on point spread. I mean, it's a huge advantage to start. Granted, you are at Kansas City week two, but I mean, yeah, it's a pretty really the Kansas City and Ravens games aside from the first 5 weeks. I mean, that's talked about pretty soft starts here with getting the two bottom NFC East teams right out of the chute. So you bet this when it first came out, just updating where things are at now, where Cincinnati does remain that second favorite on the odds board. But, you know, it hasn't moved as much as you would necessarily think. It hasn't been, I think, you know, a universal opinion that Cincinnati is naturally just going to bounce back. And I think a lot of that has to do with just the perceived difficulty of that division. Yet, plus 145, I mean, it's not the worst number in the world.
Yeah, it is. So I bet it at 175. So it has, man, they have actually taken a fair amount of action. Them Ravens plus 140, right? Them at plus 145, about even now. I mean, look, I still like the Bengals, so it's probably still a bettable number for me. But yes, right. I did get a better
bet. A team that really surprised me how I did not think the power ranking would reflect. We'll talk about that team when we come back. Hour number two starts next on A Numbers Game.